quite close, really, actually.
There are about 3,000 people killed on 9/11, if I remember, about 2,500 killed at Pearl Harbor. I lived in this country in 2001, and, you know, as it happened, coincidentally, that was also the year of the 60th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and that commemoration of that taking place just a few months after 9/11. And of course, the parallels were striking for those who remember that occasion. I mean, I don't think there is any question that the sense of shock and bewilderment and anger that were felt by Americans both in 1941 and 2001 were very vivid, and the parallels between those two situations were quite obvious. I think it's interesting, you know, to me, the most interesting parallel between the two situations is the danger for the United States of being too locked into a particular kind of threat assessment. What I mean by that is that the American political military establishment wasn't shocked by the fact that the Japanese attacked America on December the 7th, 1941. As I've said, they did have some pretty strong evidence that that might be coming. They were, however, taken completely by surprise by the fact that the attack came at Pearl Harbor. They had been assuming for many years that if the Japanese ever did attack the United States, the attack would be directed entirely against the Philippine Islands. And I think to some extent they were kind of locked into that particular scenario to the extent that they overlooked evidence that was out there for those who wished to see it, that in fact the Japanese might be planning something quite different and more audacious than that. And I think in the same way, we now know, of course, that, you know, that there was some evidence that Al-Qaeda might have been planning something along the lines of what they did in September 2001, but for a number of reasons, simply due to, you know, a mixture of honest errors and also perhaps a little bit of complacency, and also, again, a tendency to think along very narrow prescribed lines, the intelligence community in this country entirely missed what was going to happen, and it came as a complete surprise. So if there are lessons to be learned, I think there are. Remember that your enemies are often as imaginative and unpredictable as you are, and that you can't necessarily assume that what you think is they're going to do is what in fact they will do. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I think why the United States was not open to considering Pearl Harbor as being a likely target in 1941 was, it has to be said, a certain amount of condescension towards their enemy. There were, you know, often the most absurd kind of cliches and stereotypes about the Japanese in 1941. I mean, there were people who said that the Japanese couldn't possibly be good pilots because as babies, their mothers carried them around on held them to their chests, and so they didn't have a proper sense of balance that was formed and things like that. I mean, you know, this most astonishing nonsense, you know, but people seriously believed these kinds of things. And I think one of the things that was so shocking and perhaps so forced people to wake up in December 1941 was that the Japanese were more than capable of carrying out what was, you know, whatever else you may say about it, a very audacious, daring plan, which didn't necessarily succeed, of course, in the way that they were hoping, but nonetheless had, you know, spectacular results and shocking results. You know, be careful of underestimating your enemy. All I would really say is that, you know, it's interesting, you know, when we think about the effect of Pearl Harbor, though spectacular, it wasn't nearly the military success that I think the Japanese had hoped it was going to be, perhaps surprisingly. They, of course, sank 4 American battleships and damaged 4 more, but only one of those ships was ever actually permanently destroyed. It's the Arizona. That's the of course, where the memorial is. Most of the rest continued to serve throughout World War II, but not actually in any very important role. I mean, the thing about the ships that were attacked on that day was that they were old First World War vintage obsolete battleships, very slow, under-armored. The world was changing. Now, the Japanese were very unlucky, and perhaps the Americans were very lucky, that they didn't catch the American aircraft carriers, which were based at Pearl Harbor. By chance, by pure coincidence, or by pure chance, the aircraft carriers were not in Pearl Harbor that day. Had they been there and had they been sunk, that really might have changed the whole balance of power in the Pacific, at least for a good deal of time. And so for Admiral Yamamoto, who was the commander of the Japanese Navy, the man who actually masterminded the plan, ironically was very unconvinced about its wisdom and somewhat pessimistic about its success. He famously said that, you know, he felt that the Japanese would be able to run wild in the Pacific for between 6 months and a year. But after that, he had no confidence in them being able to continue the war any longer than that. And that it turned out to be a pretty accurate prediction of, in fact, what happened. Despite some early successes, of course, the conquest of the Philippines, the seizure of Singapore and Malaya and Indonesia, the Japanese suffered a major setback in the summer of 1942 at the Battle of Midway, when most of their aircraft carriers were destroyed in that famous battle, destroyed by ships which they failed to sink at Pearl Harbor on December the 7th. So in the event, for all of its audacity and for all of its shock, you know, the attack actually was very unsuccessful. And of course, the decision to attack the United States in the first place was, ultimately turned out to be catastrophic for the Japanese.